This hour of Kevin Miller in the Morning is brought to you by Tway Travel, your adventure travel specialists. Fighting for America.
The word is now that the Attorney General will resign today, and that he has served our country very, very well.
Wow.
The Attorney General will be submitting his resignation to the President.
Fighting for Idaho.
I don't know for sure who we're arming. I'm not sure that a year or 2 years from now, those weapons won't be turned on us. I'm very uncomfortable with what's going on there.
Fighting for you.
Good morning, Kevin. I just admire you to know that you keep doing the right things. Having you out there and promoting the things that you promote is sure a blessing.
Boise's Mr. Right, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award. Kevin Miller in the Morning.
Stay on top and stay strong.
On 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Good morning, true believers. Evildoers beware. Carrie Millie in the Morning at 580 KIDO. And do want to thank our great friend Gene for his kind comments. But really, I'm just humbled to be a part of your day. Truly. In the old days when we were young and stupid and thinking of all these things and the bravado and all that, and it's wonderful how life experiences pretty much wring that out of you if you're a smart cookie. But like I said, Gene, I really appreciate your kind comments. And look, I know you work all the time. You really do work all the time, and we thank you for keeping the wheels of the economy going. We'd love to see you October 17th at the Chick-fil-A on Eagle Road. And we're going to be there just doing the morning show. Stop in for a biscuit or my favorite. I love the little chicken strips. Want to thank Brad and Amy for that. That is our victory party to celebrate your commitment to what we do here each and every day at 580KIDO and to winning the Excellence in Broadcasting Award, the Marconi. And as I've said before, and I say this to everyone, it's a team effort. You can take your picture with the award. We'll put it on our Facebook and our website, and you know, you can tell everybody that you won the Marconi. And we're all winners when we have each other, that we have the ability to reach out. You know, a lot of people talk about the community. A lot of people really talk about doing things. And fortunately, we've been blessed with great sponsors and great believers like Brad and Amy at Chick-fil-A, like our friends at CapEd Credit Union that allow us to go to schools. We'll be at Timberline High School tomorrow. That allow us to do these things, and you that listen and tell people to listen. I get it. It's not easy. The news, a lot of people like to tune out. You know, how many times do we play the Chris Troupas clip, and it's the society that we face.
Enjoy your beer and ride your ATV and watch sports. We'll run the country.
And we see what's running the country. Now, we're chasing Chris Farrell of Judicial Watch. If we get him, great. If not, these things happen, and we promise to get him on as soon as possible. Sometimes, as Dave Ramsey likes to say, life happens. So coming up this hour, I do want to talk to you about how secure you believe the White House is, number one, and this issue that happened last night in the big football game where you have a Kansas City Chiefs player who, as soon as he scored a touchdown, Hussein Abdullah got on his knees, prayed to Mecca, and all of a sudden he got a 15-yard penalty, and you have people that are saying the country is too pro-Christian, saying that one person prays to Jesus and doesn't get a penalty. Abdullah prays to Muhammad and gets 15 yards. It's interesting. Apparently we have reaction from the Kansas City media. The refs didn't say anything to him, and he didn't ask for an explanation because he was pretty sure it was for the slide. So what a wonderful world we live in that we're going to debate now, not domestic violence, not child abuse, when we should be talking about football games, but praying to Mecca and prayer in sports. Let's go now to Ron Paul Jim with K. Milley at 580KIDO. Good morning, Ron Paul Jim.
Morning, Kevin. I had a question, a suggestion of an investigation for Judicial Watch, and that is the truth behind the storyline, which has got us involved in the Middle East in every one of these conflicts, and the result of every one of these interventions that our government does with Gaddafi, with Egypt, with Syria and Iraq. It seems that if you are on the outside looking in, the end results seem to be that we are pro-radical Islam, because each group that we supported were radicals, and each dictator they toppled or attempted to topple, was more secularist.
So what's your point in a succinct sentence to Judicial Watch?
I think we should investigate whether or not we're being told the truth about faulty intelligence or making decisions that end up costing us, costing their countries millions of lives. And I, because I see this story being...
Right. So your question is, and again, you're saying you want them to investigate why we're in the Middle East. Is that correct?
Well, yeah. I mean, like from Nurse Daria all the way up to the Muslim Brotherhood and the overthrow of Gaddafi, and look what's happened to Libya since. Look at what's, you know, what, you know, the Syrian rebels, the storyline came out that the people that was seen with John McCain were the ones that sold the reporter to the radicals for like $50,000.
All right, Ron Paul, Jim, why don't you hang up and we'll get that answer for you. Who would have thought that Chris Farrell, even when he's not on the air from Judicial Watch, is taking over the segment by getting questions? Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. It's great to be on with you.
So here we have Ron Paul, Jim, wanting you to investigate why we're in the Middle East. Is that outside your jurisdiction?
No. Nothing is.
It is an interesting thought that, you know, one minute John McCain's out there with the Syrian rebels and, uh-oh, they're the bad guys.
Yeah, it's a revolving door. And, for, you know, that's part of the problem is you got a lot of people shooting their mouths off like they have $1 million in the pocket and they get about a nickel's worth of knowledge. You know, John McCain never saw an overseas adventure or involvement that he didn't like. So he's all for going to war with whoever's out there. And that's kind of his pattern. Or at least it seems to be that way. You know, I have from a very, very reliable source, this is a general officer, that 18 months ago, the Obama administration not only was being given full, accurate, complete intelligence briefings on what the president now says, you know, was a failure of intelligence, but he was given military options to act on those that intelligence. And he's either, you know, disengaged, uninterested, waffling, checking the political wind. This is an absolute rock-solid source and a person who would have firsthand knowledge of these things. And they've told me 18 months ago. Full briefings, who the bad guys are, what they're doing, what their goals and intentions are, and military, you know, active military operations to disrupt or destroy them, and the president did nothing. So, the president wants to throw the intelligence community under the bus. He needs to be very careful because history will show that they're quite able to throw him under the bus as well once everything is said and done.
Do you think that's what's really going on behind the scenes, considering the president says he missed the mark, and, again, it's George Bush's fault? Again, it's not a very leadership-like thing to do, right, Chris?
No, I mean, you can go back. It's all George Washington's fault, right? Let's just keep pointing, and then we'll end up with, you know, this is lunacy. This is cowardly blame-shifting. When has he ever accepted responsibility for anything?
That's a good point. Well, Osama.
Right. Taking the credit for brave guys who did an incredibly dangerous operation, you know, that God forbid one of those helicopters didn't get off the ground, right? Then they would have been blamed again.
Exactly. And again, now he publicizes our covert ops, which may or may not be a good thing. Chris Farrell joining us from Judicial Watch. Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580KIDO. The big story, props to you guys. Ding dong, the witch is dead, or at least he's going to resign eventually.
Yeah, you know, Holder never should have been attorney general to begin with. The guy's a disgrace. He was in the middle of the Clinton pardon sell-off at the end of the second Clinton administration. You know, he was in on the Mark Rich deal. This is the same guy who, in his first public statement, said that we're a nation of cowards when it came to matters on race. Missing the irony of the first black president, the first black attorney general. You know, a guy who, I mean, he's not quite at the level of Al Sharpton when it comes to being a race hustler, but he's really close. So a guy who selectively enforces the law, who does things to actively disrupt and minimize law enforcement, going after the state of Arizona for wishing to really just enforce federal immigration law, be consistent with what the federal law is. You know, the whispering campaign to legalize marijuana and to not enforce our drug laws. Tell the DEA agents who get shot at, kicking down doors, that, oh, well, it really doesn't matter anymore. A guy who attacks marriage, a guy who doesn't want voting laws and voter IDs, which, like, you know, 90-some-odd percent of the American public thinks that if you go into to vote, you should at least prove who you are. This guy's done more to corrosively, you know, wear away at and attack the Constitution than any attorney general in memory. You know, maybe I don't want to go so far as to say in history, but it probably is history. So
let's go over the Holder postmortem here for a minute. Chris Farrell joining us, Judicial Watch, judicialwatch.org. Kevin Miller here at 580KIDO. How shocked were you that when he was appointed, the first thing he did is insult the integrity of the United States by saying we're a nation of cowards when it comes to race? And then as they're burning buildings in Ferguson, Missouri, he's calling for an investigation of the police and mad that videos essentially reinforce that the person killed had a criminal intent there.
Yeah, I mean, this is when it's very troublesome when facts get in the way of these sorts of things. Your listeners should not forget that he sent down, when it came to the whole Trayvon Martin Zimmerman debacle, you know, his community organizer folks, the community relations branch people out of DOJ, went down there and organized protest rallies. They organized college students from Sanford, Florida, to go on a 45-mile, march that ended up in the police station being surrounded. The Department of Justice was active in organizing rallies and meetings in churches in order to get people, spun up to go out and act out in a disruptive way. Shutting down the police station is one example of it. And in calling it, you know, community outreach. And in all the records we obtained and all the travel vouchers of the people that were flown in from around the country from the Department of Justice to run these sort of activities, I'll just call them that, you never saw a single effort to conduct, quote-unquote, outreach to Mr. Zimmerman and his family and supporters. It was all a one-way street. Now, the shooting, that whole, the legal question underlying this issue is a nightmare, right? Nobody would ever wish to be in that position, or anybody, whether you're Zimmerman or whether you're Trayvon Martin. The whole thing is a legal nightmare. I'm not talking about that. What I'm talking about is the activities of the government employees and attorneys being sent down into that already bad situation, and doing nothing but making it worse, stirring it up and turning it into a miniaturized race war in that county, and all at the direction of the attorney general. This is lunacy. It is un-American. Creating additional upset and turmoil and throwing gasoline on the fire is not his job as attorney general.
Well, and, you know, to build upon that, you have the Black Panthers, you have, and again, Chris, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, under the Civil Rights Department, according to one former person that left, black-on-white crime was not viewed as a civil rights violation under Holder.
Nor was any Voting Rights Act activities where people could say, well, look, you know, we should take an even-handed view of this, or we should have a standard that is colorblind. It's just a matter of, are you who you say you are, and are you registered to vote here, yes or no? I'm not interested in your skin pigment or how you spell your name or who your grandparents were. Are you who you say you are, and are you lawfully registered to vote here? That's the standard. Not, you know, your socioeconomic bracket or any other nonsense. And that's not what the official position was in the voting rights section. And I know that because the guy who was the deputy chief, a guy by the name of Robert Popper, resigned from the Justice Department and now works for Judicial Watch. He's
yes.
one of our attorneys.
Yeah. I remember when that
story. I'm not guessing at this. I know it for a fact.
I remember when that story broke. Chris Farrell, please stand by. More from our friend Chris Farrell at Judicial Watch as we continue to take a look at Eric Holder and what's next for the Department of Justice, what's next for the integrity of the United States. It is 720. You're listening to 580KIDO. Time for traffic.
Steve Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
726, 580KIDO. Good morning. Chris Farrell with us from Judicial Watch. Chris, before we get back to Holder and your thoughts on why he decided to step down, what do you make of the current lax protective security with the U.S. Secret Service?
Well, familiarity breeds contempt. The job the Secret Service has, particularly the uniformed officers, is not only hugely important, but it's also very difficult, and it's incredibly tedious. And so when you ask people to stand post or to conduct the same routine the same way day after day after day over and over and over again, unfortunately, human nature being what it is, there's an element of sloppiness that kicks in over time. And anybody who's been in any sort of military or paramilitary operation, like police or certainly the uniform division of the Secret Service, knows that the things that get done are the things that are inspected. And if the leadership, if the supervisors are not inspecting something, it won't get done, or it won't be monitored, or it won't be checked, or it won't be. And in this case, I guess there's a question of an alarm that was deliberately set on, you know, mute or off or whatever. And so like most problems with any large institution with an important job like that, it really comes down to a leadership failure. And so I am quite certain that at the right level, they're going to scapegoat it down as far as they can. That's an institutional just reality. That's what happens, is they have to find somebody they're going to hang out to dry. But the larger question is the uniform division of the Secret Service, who's kind of the front obvious line that's out on the street manning those little guard station boxes and those sorts of things. There's got to be a shakeup. And, you know, what, like I said before, what gets inspected is what is done well, and what you blow off and don't inspect, guess what? It slides. So there needs to be a sort of a reinvigoration of the uniform service, the uniform division of the Secret Service.
Let's give credit where credit is due to your organization, Judicial Watch. How much of the responsibility do you all believe that you had in having Holder say, we'll be seeing you?
I don't know that it's cause and effect, but I do know that there's sort of an accrual, right? So over time, we've accrued victory after victory after victory against the Department of Justice and Holder's political operation there. So when it comes to things like the IRS scandal, where he had a direct obligation to appoint a special counsel and has failed, the person he did appoint was an Obama political operative who had given thousands of dollars to the campaign. That person has no credibility. So he punted on that and did a poor job, and now the court is going to force discovery of the IRS, and we'll get to the bottom of what's going on there. On the matter of Fast and Furious, of course, he was held in contempt of Congress. The president, in an effort to save him, invoked executive privilege, which is a very dangerous thing, frankly, because what that says is that the president now has firsthand personal knowledge and made decisions about having Mexicans killed with U.S. firearms. And nothing short of that. I mean, the president has direct personal knowledge of the decision to send weapons into Mexico, knowing people would be killed. That's what that means. and your listeners shouldn't confuse that or have any kind of double talk around that. His imposing executive privilege over all those Fast and Furious documents means that Holder came into the Oval Office and discussed everything that they were going to do, knowing the results. That is breathtaking. No one pays attention to it. There isn't a lot of discussion about it. But you, no one died in Watergate. Not a single person. And there's 300 dead Mexicans, one dead Border Patrol agent, and there's reason to believe another dead deputy sheriff. And the blood is literally on the hands of, not literally, figuratively on the hands of the Attorney General and the President because of the position they've taken. And so we're going to get those records produced to us on October 22nd, 2 weeks before the House of Representatives, because we pursued this case as vigorously as we have. That stuff takes a toll. And over time, it's additional pressure and additional, really going to be an embarrassment to Holder. And I think that he wants to bail out of that administration 2 years early because they realize the wheels are coming off.
Quickly to Cindy for Chris Farrell of Judicial Watch at 580KIDO. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning. Before I ask my question, I support Judicial Watch wholeheartedly, and I admire all the work that you guys do. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I am having a trouble understanding with all of the things that are being done. Why have not these people been brought up on charges? I'm missing something, I know.
All right, Cindy, we'll let you hang up because we're short on time, but thank you for the question, and Chris will answer that, okay?
Okay.
So Holder runs the Justice Department, and that's where charges would be brought. And so he's certainly not going to take legal action against his pal, the president. And so the default position would be, well, really the House of Representatives would have to not just hold the Attorney General in contempt, they would have to impeach him. You know, impeachment is not just for the president. Impeachment is for all of those constitutional officers, whether they be secretaries of various departments or the Attorney General. And Mr. Boehner has the authority to begin impeachment proceedings against them. The problem would be they would have been tried in a Harry Reid Senate, and figure the odds of that going through. Now, what the Obama administration is very nervous about is if the Republicans take the Senate in this next election, then you would have a Senate led by Republicans, which means that Mr. Boehner might find the leadership and courage that he's lacked so far to actually impeach Obama himself personally. Perhaps what might be easier for him is to impeach lesser officers, so people like the Attorney General and others, who would then be tried in a political trial in the Senate. And a Republican Senate might just convict some lesser officers. That's a very interesting dynamic in it. Those cards might be on the table. No Republican leader wants to talk about that because they just want to get through the election and hopefully take the Senate. They don't want to discuss future operations because they're afraid it would taint the election itself. But that's the political calculus that's involved.
Chris Farrell, we appreciate it. Once again, great job. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You're listening to 580KIDO.
John Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580KIDO, with the latest on ISIS and our attacks on them. We're joined by Fox News Radio's Rachel Sutherland. Rachel, good morning.
Good morning.
So what's the latest from our perspective, from the Washington perspective?
Well, the latest is that we do have some of the hard numbers on the security, on the airstrikes that have been taking place. We've had more than 200 airstrikes in Iraq since all this started in June. I believe 66 in Syria since we began bombing there. Most of those have been U.S.-led strikes. Now, the question, though, Kevin, that a lot of people have is, are these strikes working? You have some of the Kurdish fighters who are there on the ground saying, oh, thanks for the for the airstrikes, but we need more. We need weapons. We need artillery. We need help. And there have been some reports that ISIS is continuing to advance toward Baghdad. So a lot of people just wondering, what's the effect of these airstrikes?
Well, that's wow. You hit it out of the park there, Rachel, with the disclosure that ISIS, in spite of these airstrikes, are moving closer to Baghdad.
That's a report out of the independent newspaper. Fox News, I don't believe, has independently confirmed that. But there are reports that they are marching towards Baghdad. And that is the concern, obviously, as a capital. In any case, wherever they are, they have been able to take just unbelievable ground in Iraq and also in Syria, that in ways that hadn't been expected, that even the president mentioned in his 60 Minutes interview that intelligence had been wrong about not only how strong ISIS is, but also about the Iraqi military's capabilities when it comes to dealing with the group. In fact, we've heard that Iraqi military members have basically turned and run away from these militants. So that's disturbing in and of itself.
Yeah, considering all the money, all the training, in fact, our 116th, they were the last troops to turn over Camp Victory, that huge facility there. And then you have, and again, Rachel, we'll go a little deep here, you have what they called Mortaritaville, which is the largest air base there, Balad Air Force Base, which at one time was being surrounded by ISIS, and you have a lot of contractors there. So even though we might have not a lot of troops, we still have business, private citizens, a lot of assets on the ground there, and I'm sure the folks in Congress and the White House are concerned about their safety.
Oh, most definitely. Yeah, anybody who is in Iraq or Syria right now is in danger, and there's no doubt about it. And the people who are brave enough to go, either they're fighting or going to be part of the military presence that is there, they're risking their lives, the journalists, the diplomats, anyone who is there is definitely in grave danger. Anywhere near ISIS, I wouldn't want to be within 10 miles of them, or even, you know, if you think about it, I'm glad I'm on this side of the globe.
You know, that's what we love about you. It's a little too real, but we like that. Let me hit you with this. Do you think that anybody in Congress will have enough guts to say or to hold hearings? And you would know if they're considering this. You know, we spent billions of dollars. We've lost so many lives. And the Iraqi military, as soon as they found out the guys in the pajamas or the whatever you want to call them with the machine guns, cut and run.
Right. And there will be more questions from Congress. You know, but right now, of course, Kevin, they're all focusing on their reelection campaigns. We have the midterm elections coming up in just a few short weeks, if you think about it. So they've left, but they're here now. But many of them are campaigning, and they've got their attention on that. And I think that's why a lot of them wanted to, before they left town, before they wanted to get this passed. Of course, here today, they are going to be here probing this Secret Service failure at the White House. But that's aside from that. Yeah, members of Congress definitely concerned about what's going on there. Many have spoken out and saying that this will not work, the idea of arming the Sunni rebels in Syria, that we need boots on the ground. But so far it appears that the Obama administration is still not willing to consider that option.
Any rumors or any clarification to the rumor that some in Congress want to come back to formally authorize the president to take action or perhaps greater action?
I've heard some of that. I need to get that confirmed before I will answer that. But, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of people who are a lot of members of Congress who, again, don't think that this president is taking enough action. And I don't know that he even has his entire party on board with what he's doing. So certainly he is facing kind of a challenging time, to say the least, in his presidency, and certainly because he campaigned on getting us out of Iraq and ending the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. To have this on his hands now, it just is would be the last thing that this president would want.
And finally, Rachel Sutherland with us, 580KIDO from Fox News Radio from Washington. We heard you at the top of the hour talking about the reaction to the White House, the new disclosures that this jumper runner got a lot further than imagine. What's the reaction there at Ground Zero?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm at the Capitol now, and they're getting ready to hold a hearing here in just a few minutes, the House Oversight Committee, on this jumper who, I guess, went farther than any jumper had gone before. Omar Gonzalez, armed with a knife, was able to make it through the East Room. You know, it's kind of funny, Kevin, because I've done pool coverage of the White House, and they always move you very carefully from one location to the other. Well, anyway, they took us to the front door, you know, there's a North Portico, and it was locked. And so we actually stood out there for a while until the aide got the right key, and then we finally got through and got into the East Room. And it just, you know, it really made me wonder, how did this person get through? Because at that point, that was locked. They're very cautious. And not only did he get to the east room, which is he would have hung a sharp left to the east room, but then he made, that's a large room, make it all the way through and then get almost to the green room, which is in the back of the White House, overlooks the South Lawn. I mean, really, that's quite a breach.
Well, and again, having been to the White House, I thought that he had gone upstairs because, you know, you've got the map room on the downstairs. And again, the blue room is literally a blue room.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to figure it out myself just how he did this. But you have to wonder, the alarm was silenced, got past one Secret Service person. And you don't have to be a fan of 24 or of Homeland to know, thank goodness that this guy didn't have some type of explosive device.
That's right. You think about, okay, he's armed with a knife. I mean, we think about something like the shoe bomber or the underwear bomber, and you've got things that are not visible. And so someone may not look armed as they're crossing or jumping over the fence. And part of it, Kevin, is that these fence jumpers are just so commonplace. You would either, every time, you know, I've been there, I mean, there's been a bag near the fence, and they, you know, they shut everything down, and then it's cleared. And so I think it's almost become routine that you have these people doing this. And so it could be possible that that's one of the reasons that this has become routine. But you can bet that the Secret Service is going to be on the hot seat. I mean, here, well, coming up, they're going to be answering a lot of questions.
Right. You've got Congressman Chavez that from Utah that's going to probably head that. But let me hit you with this. When you go to the White House, I mean, are you looking over your shoulder? You get the impression that it's secure because they go through everything. You got that little booth up front, whether you have credentials or not. They look at your Social Security number. It's a very thorough vetting process. At least that's my impression when I visited.
Oh, you are absolutely correct. I mean, I don't have a hard pass, but I do go. And when I go, I have to give my name, Social Security number, pretty much everything. And I have to be cleared before I go. I don't know what they're looking for exactly, but apparently, yeah.
Probably too many.
Through, I feel secure.
Probably too many appearances on this show.
Yeah, well, she talked too much with Kevin. We can't let her through. There was one morning when it just, you know, things just kind of fall through the cracks. Ended up sitting outside of that gate there.
Oh, yeah.
About an hour and a half. Just, you know, people walking past me who do have hard passes. I'm like, great.
Right, and you're like, hey, can I come in? And
No, they won't let, I heard a story once that they wouldn't let Dan Rather in. I mean, just because he wasn't on the list. I mean.
Oh, yeah, they don't play. And the guards really don't have a lot of personality there.
No, and you can't really charm them, and that's unfortunate. But, I mean, maybe I can still work at it.
Well, Rachel, we always appreciate it. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
All right, Rachel Sutherland there at 580-KIDO. Phone number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We'll take your calls next. Quickly to traffic.
580-KIDO and Tway Travel are getting ready to send you on an incredible trip. Be listening for details soon on 580-KIDO.
Okay, Kevin Miller in the morning here, 580-KIDO. Let's go to the phones. Pro-Life, good morning. You're at 580-KIDO.
Yeah, you know, Judicial Watch was on there, and their original, their name, you know, Judicial Watch, sounds like they're supposed to watch the judiciary, but it sounds like they're really watching the executive branch, and, of course, there's a lot of corruption there. But, you know, people don't really think too much about how Congress is supposed to monitor the judicial branch, and Congress has the power to impeach any member of the judicial branch if they do not follow the written Constitution. But we have not done that for, I don't know, hundreds of years.
Now, look, Congress is afraid to do anything because of what happened to Clinton. You could have the goods on Clinton. You could have everything else. And like Chris Farrell said, it's a political trial. And when you own the press, when you own the means of influencing folks, you're going to get the benefit of the doubt. Heck, look what happened to the Republicans. They went after Clinton, rightfully so, and they lost. The guy broke the law.
No, I totally understand that. But see, the problem is, if you take that position that just because you don't have enough votes in the Senate to remove the president from office or remove somebody else from office, you're not going to bring the indictment.
Who's going to bring an indictment of a charge you can't win?
Well, you have to do that, or else the public thinks that they're not indictable. They didn't do anything wrong.
Here's the public.
Go enjoy your beer and ride your ATV and watch sports. We'll run the country.
Yep.
That's the public.
That is the public, and the public, they'll have to lose their ATVs and their TV and their beer before they
Now,
okay.
Here's the skinny. You're not going to have health insurance. You won't have a ride, but, hey, you're going to have all your recreational vehicles.
Right. Well, hey, you know, people aren't going to wake up. I can't see it until they get real hungry. They're pretty stupid. The voters are the problem. You know, politicians are just a reflection of the voters. So, hey, we get what we deserve. And it's pretty sad. So anyway, Kevin, I like what you do, and you're the best, I think.
Well, I'm glad you think. That's rather reassuring. It's not a definitive.
Well, I'm not omniscient. I don't know everything.
Just for that, this is what you get.
Ah! Oh!
Ah! Thank you, Pro-Life.
All right.
All right, 580 KIDO, 54 in Meridian. Let's get you to track. 7:59, Kevin Miller in the morning. Stay with us. Let's talk a little workplace violence versus domestic terrorism. We'll talk a little bit about that, plus the latest from Fox News on the radio, and how secure, how safe do you believe the White House is, considering the mad lunatic jumper ran wild and free? What are we paying these folks for? Let's find out next.
Serving Meridian.